Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 241.
This week on the podcast, we welcome the adorable baby giraffe of pregnant giraffe gate fame, cute tiny animals, fuzzy things.
Then try to forget we're going to die in a nuclear war with lunatic North Korea, unless perhaps they like chocolate cake and great chemistry as much as Donald Trump.
Plus, the White House has a mouse and presidential aide infestation.
And Democrats are seeing a surge in local successes, leading some to ponder a bold new strategy of having a message.
Plus, I was paid $100 million to march in the tax march on Saturday. Give or take hundreds of millions of dollars, because I actually just paid $22 in Uber fare to be there.
And United Airlines is just as bad as you remember from before the last time you vowed never to fly them again.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Do it.
That is if we don't die in a nuclear war tomorrow.
That's right.
Or anytime. Before we begin, giraffe was born.
That's great.
The baby giraffe is here.
This was a thing that I just learned of recently. Not the birth, because it just happened.
Right.
But I mean, that
pregnant
it was
giraffe
a thing
gate.
That people were caring about.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We're really invested in pregnant giraffe gate.
We were talking about one earlier, but this is another board office.
Yes.
Thing, right? Isn't it? Right?
This is, well, no, wasn't this? This was the giraffe that Republicans did not want the live feed to be focused on because they thought it would be obscene for people, presumably children, to like watch a giraffe being born or something like that. I'm pretty
sure
that's.
Where was this being watched?
There was a live cam.
I know, but where? Did you have to go to like some zoo website or something?
Yeah, it was like a zoo thing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what this giraffe is.
Got it.
Is the baby of.
No, I think you're right.
Giraffe gate. Yeah.
Yeah. And giraffes can be pregnant for, like, 5 years or something ridiculous,
yeah.
But that's wrong. But
also,
I mean, like,
there's nothing disgusting about giraffes giving birth or obscene.
I mean, I would contend that there's disgusting things about
anything
giving birth.
Right. But I mean, they're not obscene things. They're just disgusting.
Right.
Plenty of things about birth are disgusting.
Right.
None of them are obscene.
No. No, they're not.
So in any case, but moving on to less fuzzy-wuzzy, adorable things.
Yeah, basically we tricked you with a cute story about the giraffe.
So that you wouldn't freak out when we tell you that everyone's worried we're going to die in a nuclear attack.
Yeah. But thankfully, it doesn't seem like it's going to be at the hands of North Korea.
No. All anyone was talking about was whether we're going to die in a nuclear war with North Korea, because Trump has been busy talking shit about them real hardcore.
Yeah.
And our strategy under Obama was like, let's not poke the bear and let's just see what happens. They seem to be failing on their own.
Yeah.
China this week, at one of the more epic meetings with Donald Trump.
At Mar-a-Lago, obviously.
Was like, work this out yourselves, fuckers.
Right.
And
because we have been leaning on them heavily to sort of...
To like broker some sort of deal.
The
but they're like, no, these assholes are crazy.
Yeah,
we know it.
Right.
We're just trying to be friends with them because we're on their border and we're not trying to die.
Well, and that's the thing. That's why we've been leaning so heavily on them. Is because like... It does make sense, and they don't want...
Well, they're
one
of the only countries that has a relationship with North Korea.
Right, exactly.
To
the degree that anybody can have a relationship with North Korea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But also, there were a bunch of North Korean defectors that were, like, walking around being like, Kim Jong-un would just drop a bomb on anyone anytime, no problem. Like, they were just adding fire to what was already
a
disaster.
Well, and we knew that this weekend was the, what's it called, the Day of the Sun or whatever it is or something like that. It's the anniversary
Kim Il-sung.
Kim Il-sung, right.
Who
the
founded
grandfather,
the
current
North Korea.
Right.
Founded it.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
And so they have parades, and at their parades, they show off all their new military technology.
Right, exactly.
So they showed off a bunch of missiles. But we all acted like this was something out of the ordinary, and that really wasn't.
Right.
They do that all the time.
Do that all the time.
That's not an unusual North Korea move. The reason this is all coming up, though, is because North Korea has ramped up its missile program, for sure.
Right.
And they've conducted several missile tests this year already.
Right.
And a lot of people, experts are saying that they will have the capability to reach the U.S. in 2026.
Right.
They don't currently.
Right.
But we sent a Navy strike group over there. That was something that Trump was talking about with the Chinese president at their Mar-a-Lago chocolate cake bonanza.
Yeah.
And so North Korea said, well, they were prepared to respond. And then Trump was like, China, do something. And China was like, shut up. And then, we were all forced to hear about their delicious chocolate cake eating adventures.
Yeah, exactly. I learned a lot about this whole situation yesterday from a source that I often forget knows about these things because I've spent a long time thinking that I really don't care for her very much, Andrea Mitchell
yeah.
on MSNBC,
yeah.
who I don't particularly care for, but I forget
but
that
she does know about this.
Yeah, she's their like main foreign correspondent right. person, and I listened to her go on about this for about 15 or 20 minutes yesterday, and then sort of thought to myself, she knows things about some things.
Yeah.
Buffoon about
she doesn't
others, but
need to be listened to when it comes to local election news.
No, she certainly doesn't.
Or national election
but
news.
But anyway.
But our relationship with North right. Korea falls under right. her purview.
My understanding is that the, at least what was of concern in regards to what they sort of trotted out during this parade
right.
was that those were larger missiles.
Yes.
And they were prototypes. So they right. weren't actually functioning. Although it doesn't, as we you know now, it doesn't seem like any of their missiles are functioning.
Right.
But they, it was obviously in an attempt to be like, look,
yeah.
we are working on missiles that will eventually be able to get to you.
Exactly.
Like, that's why they sort of
yeah,
rolled
was,
those particular missiles
they,
out
all
like
of their,
they did.
All their pageantry is messaging.
Right,
that's
of course.
What they do.
Right,
and
exactly.
Trump has been talking so much shit about
right.
them that they, and has said even to China, we will act alone
right.
to stop North Korea
yeah.
if necessary, that North Korea is feeling in their infantile, you know, political way.
Right.
The sort of threat of this of Trump's threats and is doing their pageantry the way that they do it
right.
to show us
yeah.
that we should be afraid too. And
this
here's
is
the
type
thing.
Of pageantry that we know Trump himself wanted to have.
It's, he
at
wanted
his
to
own
have a military parade at his inauguration, exactly.
Yeah.
So they launched a missile test today, but it failed, according
yeah.
to South Korea. But it's all been part of this Kim Il-sung celebration
yeah.
and it. This test was meant to increase tensions because
it
they
totally
love
was.
Tensions.
They do.
They literally
yeah.
exist because of tensions.
It would have increased tensions more
if it had,
it not failed literally upon launch, which is what happens.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not
still.
It's that's part of their like that's how their regime maintains control and authority.
Yes.
Is they say the imperialists are coming and
right.
then everyone panics and says
right.
we will do whatever
deal. And I'm sure their people don't know that this missile test failed on launch.
I doubt it.
How would they?
How would they?
It's not
who's
like,
gonna tell them.
I was gonna say, certainly not.
It's not Google's not reporting that in North Korea.
No.
But I mean, this is just like part of the way that their internal politics
totally.
Operates. So
yeah.
there's that element to it, and I think one of the reasons that Obama was like, let's not do anything rash, was because it is a problem if their weapons program, you know, moves forward.
Right.
However, it's all for domestic perception issues. It all has to do with maintaining the authority of the regime there. And
right.
and part of the way that they do that is threaten, you know, and try to look strong to external
sure.
sources.
Yeah,
and
of course.
So, like, a lot of this is about domestic politics there.
Yeah.
And even the Trump stuff is ultimately about a domestic issue there. So, like, we don't need to encourage a crazy person because
yeah.
Kim Il-sung is not, I mean, Kim Jong-un.
Kim Jong-un.
Kim
yeah.
Il-sung was just, he was the original dear leader. People
right.
actually,
yes.
people liked him because he was, I think, the only, like, personable one of the bunch.
Sure. Well, he's a god, too.
He's a god, exactly. But, I mean, like, he was an actual, like, charismatic leader who, like, took control of the
sure.
country.
Yeah, right.
And then his son and grandson are a bunch of idiots
yeah,
who have just been running around.
Fools.
And his grandson is an actual fool.
Yes,
he is. So,
yeah.
that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
In any case, the really important news from all of this was how delicious the chocolate cake at Mar-a-Lago is.
So delicious.
First of all, you should know that Trump and the president of China have great chemistry.
Mm.
Just like the reality show that he's casting.
It's disgusting.
They had a chemistry read at Mar-a-Lago.
Yes.
And it went well.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
And then he also said, I mean, we understand each other, which is super hilarious because President Xi has a translator with him at all. Like, they literally don't understand each other.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's like in a literal, in the most basic
yeah.
sense, they don't understand each other.
Yeah.
But so he was doing an interview for Fox Business Network.
Yeah, with, what's her name?
Maria
Bartiromo.
Bartiromo.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he was telling the president of China about his Syria strike.
Right.
Because it happened while they were at dinner.
Yes.
And not only does he mention Iraq instead of Syria, only to be corrected by Bartiromo, but like 75% of the quote is about this chocolate
cake. It's about
cake.
The cake.
It's all of, it's like he's going on about how delicious and the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen was
uh-huh.
consumed by the two of them. And, you know, the president of China was enjoying it,
yes.
you know, very much.
Sure.
That, and it
Who
was,
doesn't like chocolate
I mean,
cake?
It was the most beautiful piece he'd ever seen,
yeah.
as you can only imagine.
Yeah.
But so he basically managed to both mistake the country that he was bombing.
Yeah.
And also
had
spend...
Or,
had
no,
bombed.
It was about
it
to
was
bomb.
In,
about
they
to
were,
bomb.
Yeah, this yeah. was all while it was happening. But also spent most of the time that he's making this mistake talking about chocolate cake.
Right.
But apparently our relationship with China is really improving this chocolate cake. Their chemistry was so outstanding that Trump walked away thinking things are improving. And the Chinese government was like, I mean, I guess it's better than it was. Right.
An article that I looked at earlier this week that the Chinese media has been really one of the world leaders at trolling Donald Trump.
Well,
they love an insane headline about how he's an idiot with a goofy picture of him, and they're doing the people's work in regards to
the People's Republic of China work. The People's
Republic of China's work. Yes, exactly. But really,
there's a billion people there, and that's a lot of the people. That's a seventh of the people.
Yeah, exactly. So, but also he hasn't Trump. As we have chronicled extensively on this podcast, been doing so great.
Right.
And he's also been sort of going back on a lot of his campaign, either promises or things that he said along the campaign, and how he's handling China has been one of those. So it probably, it isn't surprising to me that their relationship is a little bit better. You know, he stopped saying that they're currency manipulators.
Right.
You know, because he realized that is no longer the case, as he was being told by everybody who knows that they're no longer doing that.
Right.
So I don't know why he was running with that story anyway, because I think he just...
Because it was a good talking point.
It was like a one-sentence thing that people clapped at that they didn't even know what it meant.
No one in
As
that
we
conversation...
As he called his national security advisor in the middle of the night to ask him whether we wanted a strong or weak dollar.
Again, that's the national security advisor and not his economic advisor.
Right, exactly.
Who knows that?
So he's confused about a lot of things, and China is certainly one of them. He does not know what to think about China, Trump.
No, well, and it's like the Syrian babies. He hated the Chinese until he met the president of China, and their great chemistry convinced him that he didn't hate the Chinese as much as he had thought.
Right.
The Chinese government was like, well, if he translates these new warm feelings into action, maybe that's a good thing. But we're not fooled by great chemistry
because
we're not a bunch of juvenile idiots.
Right.
You know? So in any case, we'll see how this transpires now that he's walking back his rhetoric on China. He also, though, speaking of destructive things, dropped... The largest conventional weapon ever used in combat on Afghanistan.
Yeah, the mother of all bombs.
The mother of all bombs.
What it's actually called,
by the
way. Yeah,
it's a massive ordnance air blast, but its nickname is the mother of all bombs.
Right.
It's
Moab.
The GBU-43.
Sure. It's the biggest, it's the biggest bomb since the
nukes.
Since
we last used the biggest bomb ever used in combat.
Right.
But this is a conventional weapon. It's the biggest conventional weapon.
Yes, exactly.
So it's not a nuclear bomb.
Nuclear weapon.
Right.
It's massive. It's got a 300-meter radius. It also does...
You can see the pictures of the blast. It's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. I think what I heard was that the reason that they used this one is that it also has technology that does some sort of thing where it obviously shakes the ground because it's a bomb. But they were bombing some compound, ISIS compound that had huge... extensive underground tunnels or something.
Oh, so they
this bomb had the ability to do something that was going to
collapse the tunnels or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, I don't have a ton of knowledge on bombs.
No.
You won't surprise you. But that's
But it has led people to sort of speculate that they're gonna escalate the ISIS attacks in general, but also in Afghanistan specifically.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if everyone's on board for that.
Well,
he said he was going to root out ISIS.
He did.
I guess we should have trusted that that was his plan.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. 100 people died. No civilians, according to Afghan officials, but no one's independently verified that.
Yeah.
The president of Afghanistan was not happy about this, as you
might not
be shocked to hear.
Yeah.
But General John Nicholson, who's our U.S. Forces commander there, has requested thousands of additional troops. Because they want to get on top of this ISIS situation. So we're just back at war in Afghanistan.
Learning to
you know what we could have done is not gone to war in the first place. And then we wouldn't be in this situation.
Sure.
That's just one of my ideas. That's a crazy thought I had.
No, I like it.
In any case, all of this is likely partially meant to distract us from some things that happen on the domestic end. This Planned Parenthood rule that just got overturned. Or not overturned, but just got reversed.
Well, it certainly did a good job distracting me because you said, we should talk about that Planned Parenthood bill. And I said, what?
Exactly. So basically, earlier in the week, Trump signed a bill into law that that could encourage states to withhold money from Planned Parenthood. Basically, there's this law that is already on the books called the Public Health Services Act, and in it, the federal government is required to provide family planning services for low-income women. Yeah. And they usually do that by giving grants to states, and then the states often give that money to Planned Parenthood, right. Which has the widest network of women's health centers of anyone in the country.
Like, if you were a state and you wanted to make sure this money got used for its intended purpose, then Planned Parenthood is who you would give it to.
The first people you'd think of.
Yeah.
Just before Obama left office, he finalized a rule that essentially says states can't discriminate against Planned Parenthood when they give out money for family planning services. This was highly publicized at the time. You might remember it. This was sort of done as a flourishy thing, because it's not actually, I mean, the law itself actually says this, so it wasn't strictly speaking necessary, but it was because this war on Planned Parenthood was going on,
right,
and he
exactly.
was trying to protect the funding for Planned Parenthood.
Right. Well, and he was trying to protect, like, a lot of states were, I think, talking about giving it to sort of, like, you know, religious institutions
exactly.
or places like that, so he was just attempting to make sure that, like, Planned Parenthood was at least sort of, like, in the mix to get the money.
Exactly. Right. But so in any case, Trump reversed this rule, and so the rule... It's likely only going to impact Republican states, but that's where a lot of low-income people who have a difficult time accessing family
sure.
planning services are, because rural areas specifically are very difficult to reach with women's health services,
right.
and Planned Parenthood is one of the only organizations that has an extensive network that reaches rural
right.
women.
Yeah.
So it's going to have a large impact on a lot of states that have high poverty levels.
Well, another thing that shows that so many places that voted for Trump are just now places
don't get things. Interestingly, I didn't know this, but Texas actually pulled out of this whole system a few years ago and set up state family planning clinic, their own state level family planning system, because they didn't want to fund Planned Parenthood clinics. So they have like an independent system.
I bet that's not going great. Well, if I had to guess,
because they kind of had to like commit to making the care accessible at the state level, because they were using it to essentially block Planned Parenthood. Childbirth paid for by Medicaid, which is like a marker that you can use to determine how many poor
sure.
women are getting
yeah,
access
yeah,
to
yeah.
these services, rose by 27%. Like, once they committed to having clinics available to everyone,
yeah.
even though it was all in an attempt to get rid of Planned Parenthood,
right.
I'm sure no one can get an abortion in that state.
I'm sure
as
not.
We know. I mean,
yeah.
we know that. But among the population that Planned Parenthood serves, because they committed all this money to doing a whole statewide system, they suddenly saw, you know, the number of, you know, childbirths being paid for by Medicaid rise. So if you commit to having services available,
right,
then that's great. A lot of states say that that's what they want to do. They want to give this money to other clinics and
right.
other providers. The problem is that they don't have the infrastructure in those states.
Right.
No one has the infrastructure except for Planned Parenthood to provide these services. So when you say you're going to do that, you have to find clinics that aren't already overtaxed, that
yeah.
aren't already understaffed. And that is very hard to do in most of these states.
Yeah.
So in any case, that's... So it's both not as catastrophic as the headlines made it sound, because the headlines
right.
made it... First of all, there's still... Many people think the law still insists that Planned Parenthood not be discriminated against in this process.
Right.
So that could go to court. But the other thing is that this is going to have an impact at the state level. This money is still there.
Right.
It's not going to be great for rural communities.
Right.
But, like, California is not going to not have Planned Parenthood
right,
anymore.
Exactly.
Like, the states that want Planned Parenthood to be
yes.
available will still
yeah.
have it. It's just like there are so many people in these poorer states who are disenfranchised
yes,
already.
Of course.
And like
why
we're picking on them.
Right.
It seems so cruel.
Right. And this is obviously part, I think, I mean,
this is all just a propaganda tool.
Well, right. And it's also part of a broader, you know,
right,
attack,
a broader attack on
which I think was a lot. Why, so when,
and a broader attack
whenever,
on women's health.
Right. Exactly. So whenever anything like this happens, even if it ends up that this is a big nothing.
Right.
Like,
it's part of a larger narrative.
Right, exactly. And it's sort of like, it just goes to show that they are really trying to do anything that they can. I mean, they're like grasping at straws to like
yeah.
try and defund Planned Parenthood. And that's the big problem, obviously. Like,
that's
whether this specific thing is a thing or not, it's like they're still attempting to.
Yeah, they're still up to no good.
They're still up to no good. Right.
Meanwhile, speaking of people that are up to no good.
Oh.
Hitler and Sean Spicer are like in cahoots at this point.
Oh my God.
It's madness.
Now is an important time.
Their latent anti-Semitism in this administration
yes.
is like
right.
beyond.
Yeah. And idiocy.
And the commitment to idiocy.
Commitment.
It's a commitment to idiocy.
That is exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Important to remember that, as you pointed out to me earlier in the week, that Sean Spicer was once the Easter Bunny.
Yes. He was once the White House egg roll.
It's Easter Bunny. Today, so before we do the story, we should remind you of that. The pictures. They exist.
They're great.
They're upsetting.
They're notable.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Later, Brent's going to explain Easter to me, by the way. Sure, so maybe. Stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like I have a better grasp on it this year than the year before.
That's good. Because after last year when we decided on the term zombie Jesus.
Once I knew about zombie Jesus.
I feel like that's when you really sort of like came, well, I almost said came around to Easter. You haven't come around to Easter.
No, I didn't become an Easter celebrant.
That's what you had, you know, you've got a thing to file away now.
When it's Easter, zombie you know Jesus. That, right, yeah, exactly. I heard someone else say it recently and I was like, oh, I guess this is a way of, no, somebody like unrelated to this podcast entirely. And I was like, oh, we're doing it.
Well, there we go.
Everyone knows about zombie Jesus.
So maybe I don't have to explain Easter to you.
Well, you know, you might want to.
We'll see.
You might want to try.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Anyway, back to John Spicer. He suggested on Tuesday at the sort of daily press briefing at the White House that Assad was guilty of acts worse than Hitler because he had used chemical weapons on his own people, and he claimed that Hitler had not.
Yeah.
Apparently, he doesn't believe that use of gas chambers is an example of using chemical weapons on your own people. And I would like to note that there was also an element of the Holocaust during which the Nazis were doing medical experiments on Jews.
Yes.
And at that time, I would contend that many of those experiments probably resulted in chemical related deaths.
I bet you're right. Yes.
In any case, he said, "We didn't use chemical weapons in World War II. You know, you had someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons. So you have to, if you're Russia, ask yourself, is this a country and a regime that you want to align yourself with?" He's talking about Syria. As to clarify, he acknowledged that Hitler had used chemical agents, but said,
"Yes,
no, there's still a difference. I think when you come to sarin gas, he was not using the gas on his own people the same way Assad is doing." There's a few things about this quote. One is that during it, he called concentration camps Holocaust centers.
No.
The other is that he seems to have forgotten about the, like, 180,000 German Jews that were both German citizens and killed by the Nazis.
Yeah.
Those are both two things that he didn't seem to know about the Holocaust. Holocaust centers?
Holocaust centers.
Celebratory centers of the Holocaust.
Oh, God.
Like.
Oh, no. He's such an idiot.
People in the room literally gasped.
Okay. First off, this is a ridiculous and terrible story. But the best thing about the story
was April Ryan's reaction to it.
April Ryan.
She gets it.
Is a getter.
She's a getter.
A big getter. Yeah. Always. Like, I did not know who April Ryan
of course
was
you didn't.
Before now. But this is like he her third time in the news. She was the one who Trump tried to schedule a meeting with the Congressional Black Caucus for and asked her if she was friends with them.
Right.
She was. What else did she do?
It was
do?
The Black Women at Work hashtag. Last week or the week before.
Oh, yeah. Stop shaking your head.
Right. Where she was shaking her head. Yeah.
Yes. Sean Spicer. She's had two run-ins with Sean Spicer. Yeah. Well, this wasn't even really a run-in. She, like, looked
she
up
just, like,
and she was trying to make contact with anyone who would have eye contact with her in the room.
She was trying to understand what she was not understanding about how insane this was.
Everyone
and why people
else
weren't
was
literally
furiously
revolting.
Writing. There was also
the woman in front of her.
Right in front of her also was sort of as horrified, more subtly horrified.
Right.
But I saw a clip of her, like, where the camera had pushed in on her. And that was...
April Ryan was the more theatrical reaction,
yes.
But the two of them both really committed.
They did, yes.
And rightly so. Like, why is the president and his staff Holocaust deniers?
I don't know.
What stock is there to be? Like, why be a Holocaust denier?
I know.
Why bother?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense to do that.
Yeah. The other thing that is annoying about this, besides the fact that he's just wrong on the facts on every level.
Right.
The other thing that someone reminded me of this week was that, you know, people like to talk about how, you know, nobody uses chemical weapons. We've signed treaties. There's, you know, whatever things everybody has signed and nobody has used them since whenever the last time they used them. We used the shit out of them in Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we like to forget about that.
Yeah,
and it would be nice to forget about it.
The people of Vietnam haven't forgotten.
To as a country sort of like pretend like.
Yeah, well, that's our classic move. Having the moral high ground.
Having the moral high ground when it was.
We have a president who was elected by a minority of the country and we're spreading democracy all over the world.
Literally burning people alive with napalm in Vietnam. So, whatever. Anyway.
We rest in our case.
So, Sean Spicer.
Holocaust centers, though. Holocaust centers.
Holocaust centers are not a thing.
That adds to the growing list of Trump vocabulary words in the alternative facts realm.
Yeah.
That. I'm excited to see a dictionary at the end of his term.
Oh my gosh.
Of all of these words.
I hope someone's.
I feel like
track.
My vocabulary has expanded so much.
Yeah.
Via them using fake words.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like my mom is also trying to make Gorsuching happen, which is plagiarism, basically.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Right. She's trying to make a bunch of these words happen. I'm for it. I'm going to start reporting them on the podcast when as they come in.
Yeah. This was also in the midst of Passover, too.
Yeah. By the way. So they only insult the Jews gravely at a time that is the worst possible time to insult the Jews.
Yeah.
They remembered the Holocaust without remembering the Jews.
That's
I mean, they don't. These are not people that are trying to remember how Jews died in the Holocaust.
No.
That's not what the Holocaust was about. It was about a great man named Hitler not using chemical weapons against his own people.
Right.
That's what the Holocaust was, if you ask Sean Spicer.
Right.
In any case, maybe he's so confused because literally everything that's going on in the White House right now is just like pure mayhem confusion.
Yes.
There is an article in Vanity Fair
about
all of the backstabbing craziness that's going on in the White House.
We ultimately stopped reading it.
I scanned.
Had a lot of words.
Or read all of it, but I just didn't take notes on all of it because it was getting too exciting. And I was like, people need to read this themselves.
Yeah. We've talked about some of this
already. Yeah. You know, the big sort of war, the Bannon-Kushner war we talked about last week.
Right.
But there's a few notable things from this article that I want to point out. The first is that the West Wing sounds disgusting. It sounds cramped. There is a fly and mouse problem. There are, you know, it's like the kind of place where the windows don't open because of security reasons.
It's
stuffy and spreads cold.
Sounds like Mar-a-Lago.
It sounds.
Did you hear about that?
Yes.
How they had all those health violations down in Mar-a-Lago or whatever? So, like 20 health violations.
Yeah, so Trump should be fairly comfortable with it. But everyone else is probably dying. And so it sounds like these kinds of close quarters can be kind of tough in even the best of times with the best intentions.
There's a lot of people walking around the White House currently who I imagine to be sort of like
grimy.
Gross, sweaty, grimy,
exactly.
Disgusting. Like there's no way that Steve Bannon
isn't
a clean,
disgusting at every turn.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
He probably smells a little. Yes. He probably spreads cold. He probably doesn't cover his mouth when he
sneezes. No, he doesn't.
Those people never do.
No, he's leaving half-eaten food for the mice to eat. I mean,
So in any case, it's as gross as you can possibly imagine to begin with. Second of all, unlike most presidencies, and that includes the presidencies that Trump is most often compared to, Reagan and Nixon.
Sure.
Everyone in the White House has their own agenda. There is no central agenda to the White House. Normally, the president's agenda is what goes in the White House, and everyone is working to make that agenda happen.
But he doesn't know what that
is. Well, first of all, he doesn't have any loyal long-term aides.
Right.
So he doesn't have anyone that even knows what his agenda is. He doesn't know what his agenda is, so that makes it very difficult. And everyone that he works with is like a lying, cheating, like, idiot who has at one time publicly denounced Trump.
Totally.
So, like, one senior administration official said, quote, they have breathtaking personal agendas and are willing to, quote, malign the people around him, but also are prepared to say, quote, we're not going to do it our way and push through what we want, whether it's right for him, or we're going to do it our way and push through whatever we want, whether it's right for him or not.
Sure.
So they don't have any ideology, and they're all working on their own agendas.
Right.
And sometimes those work with Trump. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they conflict with each other, in which case they seem to be having their staffs call media and plant stories about each other, as is the case with Renz Priebus and Steve Bannon.
Love it.
Whose staffs have spent hours on the phone with media trying to plant stories about the other one. But, I mean, we also have to remember, none of these people have known the president for very long.
No.
None of them are very loyal. Steve Bannon called him a blunt instrument in Vanity Fair last year. Renz Priebus told his aides that Trump was going to lose right before the election. And then he said to them that if Trump did, it wasn't the RNC's fault. Kellyanne Conway, who had worked for the Cruz campaign, said that if Trump lost, it would be the RNC's fault.
Right.
Ivanka has told her friends, I didn't ask for this.
Oh, Ivanka.
No one has a secure position. Everything is always shuffling. There's no clear hierarchy, so no one really knows who to talk to about things. And so a lot of people have resorted to planting stories to get the attention of Trump also.
I love that. Like, to be able to, like, get
speak
your,
to your
bosses.
Own boss.
Right, exactly. You have to, like, get
call
something,
Fox
like,
News.
In a,
Yeah, and we're talking about cable news. We're not talking about the Washington Post.
Right,
you know?
Well, because he's watching cable news.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So everyone feels sort of insecure. You know, Steve Bannon is now on the rocks, but that could change at any moment.
Yes, twice this week, Trump wouldn't publicly support him.
Exactly. Renz Priebus used to be on the rocks. They're claiming he's not anymore. I call bullshit on that.
I still think that he is.
Rince Priebus is permanently on the
rocks. He's the perfect fall guy for not being able to get anything
pass
done.
Anything. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that he's on his way out. But, you know, Conway has had her day come and go.
I'm shocked that she and Sean Spicer are still around.
I am too. Sean Spicer, I think, can only exist in the kind of rage that, like, I think that he is that rage. So, like, it's exhausting for him, but I don't think he has, like, the mental capability to be like, what would be healthy for me and my family
right.
is if I took a step back.
Right, exactly.
I think he is thinking to himself, yeah. God damn it, I have no choice but to do this
exactly.
because otherwise I'm not doing it.
He also has a thankless job. I mean, like, I'm not giving him a pass on any of the idiot things that he said. But,
he's
you know,
a Holocaust denier,
he's the person who has to go out and then, like,
be the face of this
asshattery. And tell the press, like, that there were actually 1.5 million people at the inauguration.
Right.
Or, you know, that 3 million people did vote illegally in the election.
Right. Like,
or,
he has
you
to
know,
spread
like,
lies.
I mean, he's just sort of like, he's.
Confidently.
So right, exactly. So, you know, he's got it rough. He's still a fucking tool. But,
yeah.
I mean.
He's agreeing to have it this rough.
Right.
He could
yes, exactly.
Be he could have it less rough.
Yeah. They all could.
Every one of them. Right. And many of them will by the end of this administration.
I think you're right. Yeah.
So, in any case, there's a lot of maneuvering going on in the White House
I
right
like
now.
That.
And it is because of that, we're going to stay on top of it.
Oh,
for
yeah.
you, because that's our favorite thing
oh,
about this whole administration. We're obsessed with what's going on
yeah,
in the White House.
Totally.
And there are so many people willing to leak that
oh,
you
yeah.
can find out literally everything.
Anything. Yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. In other news oh, of about the White House, they decided that they were not going to release visitor logs anymore.
Right.
This was actually a precedent that the Obama administration set where they were very committed to transparency, and so they
right.
had decided they were going to release most of the visitor logs, minus...
They were committed to some transparency.
To some transparency, right.
right.
To publicly
right.
acting like they
right.
were
it was,
committed
this
to
This was
transparency.
A part of their the
right.
transparency that was easy for them to be like, look what we did.
Exactly.
Is, right, yeah, but that's not
and
happening anymore.
So they had voluntarily released a
right.
lot of visitor records. They had gone to court to make sure that they didn't have to release all of them because some of them, like, you know, people that were involved in national security issues,
sure.
like... Sasha and Malia's friends, people like that,
yeah, yeah.
they didn't want to include. But Trump chided them on Twitter for not being more transparent.
Sure.
Back in 2012, he decided to revert back to the old policy where no one releases any visitor logs.
Yeah.
And they also, I think the bigger story here, there's a bunch of places that are planning to sue over this, especially because one place that we're not even keeping public visitor logs for is Mar-a-Lago, and he's holding a, he's conducting
yeah, that's
official,
the White House.
He's conducting official business there.
Yes.
So, in any case, there's questions about that, but... They also they got rid of the open.whitehouse.gov site, which
oh.
was where the Obama administration had disclosed both the visitor log data, but also financial disclosure
yeah.
information, salary information
yeah.
for the White House employees. They said it was a big waste of taxpayer money. It's going to save us $70,000
uh-huh.
by 2020.
Perfect.
So that's tons of money right back into the system.
Yep.
But it will take so. After 5 years, this information has to be released to the public anyway. He can try to
yes.
hold it up for up to 12 years.
Right.
But we will eventually have this information.
Yeah.
But it is...
We'll know which of his Russian sources
exactly.
were
like, I mean,
coming in and out of the White House.
It is sort of like...
That's obviously where everybody's mind went immediately.
When you're this guy...
Yes, of course.
It's suspicious.
Yeah.
If you're just your shady
yeah.
traditional politician, it's just annoying.
Yeah. Well,
but this
we
is
know most
suspicious.
Of his staff was having secret meetings
exactly.
with the, you know... various Russians and
that's I'm like they're lying to us anyway why
of course,
not
they
keep
all
the data
have been.
Why not pretend they're being open like
right
they're breaking the law regardless
I know
breaking the law by having secret meetings with foreign agents is not worse or better than breaking the law by lying on the visitor disclosure forms
right.
like why not
exactly,
pretend
right.
like we're
yeah right.
sometimes they're not smart
yeah.
in any case now we have the news of all of the local races that have gotten captured the imaginations of
yes,
Democrats near and far
everywhere
some of it's
I'm,
good news some of it's concerning
say,
news
yeah
We talked a little bit about this Georgia race a couple weeks ago, I think, this
right.
Ossoff race.
Yes.
We have some updates on that front.
Yeah,
but first,
we do.
The roller coaster of the Kansas House race that was for Mike Pompeo's seat.
Yes. A district that Trump won by 27 points and Pompeo himself, I think, won by more
32,
than that.
By 32
yeah, exactly.
points.
Oh, right, yeah. So there was a Democrat running in that race.
Of the Bernie.
Of the Bernie, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And that is an important distinction that you'll need to remember when we come to another story
right.
later.
Keep
is
that, lodge that in your mind.
Kansas, deep red district, running on the Bernie platform. He
yeah.
was running, you know, he was using a lot of Bernie's language. He was running on an economic populist message. He was running as, you know, he wanted to do something about climate change. He was running in this deep red district that LGBT people should be able to keep all of their, you know, their rights.
Right.
So that was his platform.
Mm-hmm.
He darn near pulled it out. Yeah. I mean, not really. But I mean, like, 8 points. It went from 27 points that Trump had won by and 32 that Pompeo had won
the
by
down to 8. The final tally was 7. It was 7 points.
Oh, you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
it was 52.5 to 45.7.
Right, yeah.
So, and he said that a lot of it had to do with the fact that Sam Brownback is just, like, is literally the least popular sure. governor in America right now. So they have some bad...
His approval ratings is, like, 20% or something like that, yeah.
And so, but it's a good sign nonetheless, because it means that these deep red districts are not impassable, you know, barriers to elections. It means that if you try to run in a deep red district, sometimes you'll almost win.
And have
maybe
a message.
Maybe one day you will. And have a message.
Like, he really went out there and sort of, like, tried to sell this, you know, economic populism from, you know, the progressive perspective as opposed to the, you know, whatever Trump's economic populism was. I don't even know where. Chaos. Yeah,
but
exactly.
Nate Silver pointed out that the candidate who eventually did win the seat, Bob Estes, underperformed Trump's margin by 20.3 points. If every district behaved like that, the Democrats would gain 122 House seats.
Right. And win Senate races in a ridiculous states like Texas and various other places.
It's not impossible to win a seat in a red district if you are running on issues that they care about.
That they care. Hello?
Like, nobody cares more about LGBT people than they do about their own economic security. No one is more afraid of LGBT people than they are of being poor and broke.
Of course.
Like,
yes, and not having health care.
And not having health care and all of these things. There are some issues that are popular if you only focus, you know, that sound and that make you think people are being horrible. That, you know, if you only running on dumb lifestyle issues, then, you know, by all means, a lot of places will disappoint you.
Sure.
But if you're running on a strong economic message that, you know, that talks about the strength of the regular guy.
Yes.
And isn't just about protecting big business, which both parties are doing.
For sure.
Then, you know, there are plenty of places where there's an opening for Democrats. It's like, people still live in those places. None of these districts are all millionaires.
No.
There's no district that's 700,000 millionaires.
That's absolutely true. Yes. Oh, another important thing to remember, because we'll come back to this in a little bit too, is that the DNC did literally nothing.
They made a couple robocalls at the very
the last 24 hours. Republicans obviously wanted to keep the seat, but they spent a bunch of money for, like, last ditch TV ads. Like, I mean, they really sort of, like, Republicans were like, holy shit. Like,
they poured a ton of money into it at the end.
Exactly. Yeah. So now we come to the Georgia House race.
Right.
Which, as we've talked about it before, because and the story that we talked about before was great news about how Democrats were really crushing the early voting game, where they had, you know, so many more Democrats voting than Republicans in early voting. Well, early voting ended on Friday, and that is not the case.
Right. Equal numbers now. Have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans. Yeah, I think the Democrats were at 41.1% and the Republicans 40.8%.
Right.
That was the 54,000 votes counted.
Yeah. We don't obviously know who those people voted for. Right. And also there's...
based on who voted in what primary.
Right, exactly. They're not... They don't have, apparently, like, you don't register with a party in Georgia, apparently.
So all the primaries are open primaries.
Right, exactly. So these are just people, like, looking at who has voted and which presidential primary they last voted in. So it's not
still looking
exact.
Like a close race.
Right, it's still going to be close. Right, exactly. But the thing is, this is a district that has been close before. Right. I mean, this is... They haven't had a Democrat in a long time, but, like, I think Hillary only lost this by, like, a couple percentage points to Trump.
Right.
So
that's why
the Democrats
district.
Were sort of, like, eyeing this.
Yes.
Right.
Unfortunately, they eyed it with one of the more boring human beings on the planet, which is a classic Democrat move.
And we say that because in a profile written about him.
In a local paper.
They said, literally, he is a radically... He is radically boring...
To talk or listen to.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know why I was having trouble reading there.
Yeah, well, you just can't read.
But he's also, and this is where things start to deteriorate for me in looking toward 2018 here. Because he's running as a pragmatic centrist.
Yeah.
And he's been running campaign commercials talking about cutting wasteful spending is not a partisan issue. And both parties in Washington waste too much of your money. Right. So... Also, the thing that is starting to have people questioning, like, what the Democratic Party's motives are here is, as we told you, they spent no money in Kansas. They're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on this race in Georgia. Now, I get that they think that it's winnable because it had been close in November and that Kansas district had not been. But there were calls for the DNC to spend some money in Kansas when it was realized that it was close, which was weeks ago, and they chose not to.
Exactly. They figured out that that Kansas district was closing up, and in a way that was kind of spectacular.
Yes.
Because
exactly.
We're talking about a district that had a 30-point margin in it.
Right.
And it was close to single digits.
Right, exactly. And this was, Ted Cruz went and did a rally in Kansas for Estes, the guy who won. You know, I mean, they really went for it. I think Trump recorded robocalls for him personally. I mean, like, they were not fucking around there. Yeah. And the DNC was like, good luck, Bernie loser.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
No, and they're spending millions of dollars on a guy local paper can't describe as anything but radically boring.
Right. Nancy Pelosi has been down there. The DNC has been sending fundraising emails for him. Tom Perez was quoted as saying, quote, "It's a bellwether for what the Democratic Party is going to be about," which I don't
hopefully
like the sound of.
No.
At all.
Is it going to be about cutting spending?
I know. Part of me half hopes that he figures out a way to lose this fucker.
I mean,
I hate to say that, but like, we can't have him win and then the takeaway be, let's all run like that in 2018.
Yeah. No.
Like, that's just not the answer. It's not the answer.
We just tried this. Being a pragmatic centrist has not been working out great for us, you guys.
No.
It hasn't been.
No, it hasn't.
And I, like, the distaste of hearing a Democrat ever talk about cutting spending. I realize there are times that you have to cut spending on things.
Sure, and does the government waste money?
Of course.
Yes. Like, let's not pretend like they don't. I'm not here for that. But it's not.
But that can't be the issue you're campaigning on.
That's not what you're running your campaign on.
And that's not the issue that your constituents can connect to.
No.
They're not going to be like, oh, thank God I'll have health care because we're going to cut wasteful spending.
No.
Cutting spending says the word cuts.
Yes.
And that cut sounds like services being cut when it comes from Democrats. It sounds like taxes being cut when it comes from Republicans.
Right.
But when Democrats say it, it sounds like service is being cut.
Oy, oy, oy.
They never learn.
I've been seeing a lot of stuff this week with people begging and pleading for the DNC to get their asses up to that Montana race, which is in the end of May. And because they've got that, you know,
they have a Bernie guy.
Folk singer
the Montana folk singer.
Bernie guy who is apparently running in a close race. So it will be interesting to see whether they...
Yeah, they're like parading Bernie out on tour. They can't help out any of the Bernie-ish candidates who are looking like
I think Bernie himself said that he would be open to going up there. And I think our revolution is
doing
starting to get themselves involved. Together up there. But
it shouldn't be up to our revolution to organize for places that where Democrats are suddenly...
Where we should be winning House seats. Like, do we want to win House seats?
Right.
If yes, then... Get yourselves to Montana.
Also, find a way to incorporate these people into your party because you don't want a Freedom Caucus of the left.
No.
And you're leaving people no choice.
Yes.
You know, if you're not willing, if a bunch of Bernie-style Democrats do wind up in the House and there is no opening for them other than you'll work with us you'll work with us and you'll like it, then you're just going to have a bunch of people who aren't going to be able to participate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, that's why Bernie Sanders is an independent.
That's right.
Honestly, is because he's been told that his whole life.
Yeah.
Or his whole time in the Senate and House.
Yeah.
But,
right.
You know, he was sort of like, all right, then I'm not a Democrat. Sorry about it.
Ay, ay, ay.
In any case, there is some good news at the local level in Illinois that got some wide play this week.
It did.
There are a bunch of local seats and like town races and things like that there that have suddenly swung radically in the Democratic direction.
Yes.
And it's great news because it means the Democrats are running candidates in unlikely districts and winning and succeeding at it. It means that we are focusing on local elections. We're and it means that people are actually voting in these elections.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And that's good because we have a pretty sad bench and is where you develop a bench.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think is, you know, sure, these are, but we've been conceding these types of races to Republicans
for years,
and that is why we don't have the bench. And you know, it's running in the local town, you know, whatever race, town council, that you then run for state legislature, and then you become Barack Obama.
Exactly.
Potentially. I mean, you know, there's not going to be millions of those types of charismatic people, but that's where he came from.
Yeah.
He was in the Illinois
state legislature.
Exactly. So you have to foster this. And that is another thing that is great about what happened in Illinois, because a lot of these candidates came from
a program that was intentionally designed to foster
them. Right, a program that a state rep actually in Illinois started that I can't remember what it's called.
Well, it's a boot camp, essentially. Build the Bench,
right,
is what it's called.
Build the Bench, yeah. And 12 candidates who had attended the Build the Bench ran in this April election, and 8 of them won.
Yeah.
And a ninth is in a recount right now. So
and
that's pretty good odds.
Two of them were the first black candidates to win races in town councils where the towns are almost entirely white. I mean,
yep.
it's developing a diverse bench, which is important.
Oh, and again, and one of them, I think, won. Well, there were two on the town council, but I think one of them is also the first black mayor.
Oh, yeah.
In
Kankakee.
Yeah, sure.
Kankakee? I can't with these names.
Who knows?
Stop this.
I don't know. But a couple of these
town councils literally changed entirely from Republican town councils to fully Democratic.
Right, and not only did they change entirely from Republican to Democrat. In one of them, it was the first time that the town in 100 years had had a Democrat held one single seat.
Yeah. And the entire
supervisors and trustees that run its board to totally Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, these are the things you can only accomplish when you dare to dream big enough to run in a race.
Yes, exactly. Well, and that's...
Like, we should be doing this in every state.
We really need to be... Yeah,
every
exactly.
Every district.
I know.
At every level.
We talked on the podcast at one point where there was, like... it was in regards to the... how the Democrats were really proud of themselves in Virginia, that they were going to field a candidate. They were attempting to field a candidate in every single one of their state legislature seats. And, like, while that sounds great and wonderful, Virginia... is a place that Barack Obama won twice. Hillary Clinton won. They have a sitting Democratic governor who ran the fucking DNC, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Why is this
suddenly an impressive thing? They had never run people in every district?
That is astounding to me.
That is unacceptable.
It's unacceptable. Yes,
is
exactly.
what it is.
Unacceptable and astounding.
Yeah.
Both.
That's just giving up.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what it is.
That's handing seats to
giving
Democrats
up
to Republicans.
And I think to a large degree, not caring as well. I mean,
I think that they have this sense that it takes a lot of money to elect the boring candidates in the few districts that they bother running in to get anything done. And in reality, if you find charismatic people who want to run in various districts and you give them some support, you are more likely to see results in places that you wouldn't even expect to look into.
Of course.
It's hard to find charismatic candidates. It's hard to find qualified candidates. It's hard to find all of those things. You can only create the experienced candidates, though, by letting people run.
Right.
And supporting them.
You know what? It's hard for Republicans to find those candidates, too.
Yeah. But
so it's not like we're at some sort of like innate disadvantage.
No, exactly.
We're like
those people are rare regardless. But
if
you run on a campaign platform that no one can distinguish from the other party,
and you run
candidates who have a distinctively uninspiring message,
and
then you give those candidates millions of dollars to trash the other guy without telling anyone anything that would be helpful other than that they're going to cut wasteful spending, which no one gives two shits about who isn't already a millionaire.
Right.
Like, that's not the recipe for success.
Nope.
We did the 50-state strategy once, and we won tons of seats that way.
Yes.
That was the Howard Dean innovation, the one time Howard Dean succeeded wildly at something. The 50-state strategy was a great idea. We picked up tons of seats.
Yes.
It's why we wouldn't do that
doesn't make sense.
Forever is just crazy. And why a state like Virginia isn't thinking to do that.
Right.
They're not so deep red that they couldn't dream big
not
enough to
recently,
run Republicans.
Anyway. I know. Yeah.
I mean, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah. Some mixed news coming out about what the Democrats are intending to do in 2018. It looks like the leadership is at least sort of thinking about it in the right way.
Well, there's like one way in which they are and one way in which they aren't.
Right, exactly.
Where they, in the big picture sense, are thinking we need a message.
Which is something they lacked before this point. Exactly.
So that's improvement, sadly.
Yes.
The problem is figuring out what the message will be.
Yes. Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi have apparently met on this a couple times.
Yeah.
And they are attempting to craft a strong, sharp-edged, bold economic message for 2018.
In Chuck Schumer's shooming words.
Yes. So they realize that they can't just run a look at Trump, he's terrible strategy for 2018 and then expect to have any different results than, you know, losing to Donald Trump, which was what we all just did.
They claim that it's going to be populist, which is good, but that it will unite both wings of both caucuses, which sounds suspect.
That is...
Because that's in a traditional world, that would sound great.
Yes.
Compromise is fine.
Of course.
In the Democratic speak, that when they talk about compromise, they talk about people on the left agreeing to a right-wing platform, basically.
Right.
Their compromise is their centrist policies. Yes. And their centrist policies, like, truly don't hold water for most of the left.
Yes.
There's not a compromise to be had with a lot of these policies. And when we're talking about things like free trade, where half the party is wildly for it and half the party is adamantly against it,
that was one
where
of the,
you find the compromise
that was one of the things they listed as a thing that they were going to, like, come, you know, because obviously that was a huge issue in the in the presidential election.
Absolutely.
But you're not going to be able to get the Hillary Clintons and the Bernie Sanders on the same page on free trade. So I'm curious to what that's going to look like. I'm afraid it's going to look like nothing. We're going to try and make it look like something, and it's just going to be so watered down, and it's going to
I think
it's
that's,
not gonna...
that's the danger of going with the uniting the party strategy. You can agree on the details of how you will achieve a goal, but you have to have similar goals. You have to agree that your goal is... If your goal is single payer, maybe one way of getting that is Obamacare, and one way of getting that is to, you know, encourage state legislatures to convert, or whatever it is. But your goal is the same goal, and you disagree on how to get there. That's fine.
Yeah.
I think the issue is that the Democrats in the middle and the Democrats on the left have determined that they have... different goals.
Right.
The Hillary Clinton Democrats didn't have the same goals as the Bernie Sanders Democrats. The Bernie Sanders Democrats had very specific goals. The Hillary Clinton Democrats were sort of trying to play to every side, which I understand the inclination to do it, but it left them without a clear message.
Yes.
And if they're going to unite both wings of the caucus with a message that is meant to be a compromise, they're going to be left with, well, we do want free college education for families that make under this amount of money at this year, you know, if you are between the ages of 16 and 22, and, you know, like, they're going to hear one of those. It's like when Hillary Clinton is asked whether she's against fracking.
Right, exactly.
And 20 minutes later, you're not sure what the answer is.
You couldn't,
And so they have to be aware that their compromise has to leave room for some... personal flourishes.
Yes, it does.
They have to leave room for the populist candidates to have, you know, things that they're for and against.
Right, exactly. Yes.
So
there are still a lot of moderates who are not super into this right now. And that is
But that's so crazy because they are literally arguing against having a message. That's what's so wild.
Yeah.
Whether or not you have an idiot in the White House, you have to have a message.
Yeah.
Why are you there?
Right, exactly. And they're
this
saying
this is the trap the Republicans got
and they're
pulled
saying
into.
It allowed.
Yeah.
Like, this is not...
Ron Kind told Politico it's less important what our national message is right now, given that Donald Trump is sucking all the oxygen out of the room. Quite frankly, the less we have to say about it, the better.
No.
Are you kidding me? He wants to run on nothing?
Yes.
We're just people that are here and aren't Donald Trump.
Yep.
Don't worry about what we think.
We got a D in front of our name.
That's nothing as inspiring as a guy who's just like, I'm here and I'm not another guy.
Yeah. Another moderate Democrat who... obviously knows that this is a fucked up thing to say to somebody because he would not tell Politico his name for the damn story because he wanted to speak on anonymity, said, we have no message right now, but we don't need one either. Yeah,
you literally always need a message.
You have to have one.
That's the only thing as a political party you need. You don't have to have animosity towards the other party. You don't have to have anything to do with the other party. You have to be running for something.
Yep.
People are not... We learned this the hard way just last year.
Yes.
People don't vote for nothing. They won't. They
don't
vote for a platform they don't understand. They don't vote for a platform that doesn't seem to have any teeth.
Yeah.
They want to know. They can only connect to you as a politician if they understand what exactly you're up to.
Right, exactly. They will literally vote they will vote for someone if their message is... bluster.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, that's we ended up with the... But
exactly.
I mean, it was a
but
thing.
But he had a clear message.
You could...
I mean, it wasn't clear in this policy-wise,
You could hang your hat on it, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
There were 10 polls that you could easily explain to your friends.
Yes.
When someone asks what Hillary Clinton is for, you can't say she's for free college. You can't say she's for single-payer healthcare.
Right.
You can't say she's... for gradually improving, blah, blah, blah. Like, it was always like a 20-minute explanation of what she was for. And listen, I understand from a policy perspective, that's how things get done.
Right, exactly.
She's good at figuring out how to get things done in a way that you can sort of work compromises into the conversation.
Right.
I get that.
Yeah.
That is not how you communicate with voters, though.
No.
What is a voter going to tell their friends about you when they're like, well, here's the thing. Like, it always is going to have to begin with, well, here's the thing.
Right, uh-huh.
Well, here's the thing. He doesn't have a message. I criticized Obama far and wide for this when he first entered the primary in 2008 or 7, whatever it was. I was not going to vote for Hillary Clinton because, as we know, I have a longstanding issue with her vote for the Iraq War back when she was my representative.
Sure.
I was very saddened to see John Edwards leave the race in disgrace because I was going to vote for him.
Same.
But I, you know, and Obama was inspiring and a great, you know, charismatic and a great speaker. And I was excited about what he could potentially be for.
Right.
But until he developed literally any platform, I was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Right, exactly.
I don't care if he gives great speeches. What am I voting for?
Right.
And when it turned out that I was voting for the exact same platform as Clinton, but the charismatic version, I was like, well, I guess I'm doing that.
Right.
I don't know. But maybe I'm voting for the guy who, you know, knows that the Iraq War vote was the wrong choice at this point
that
in time.
That was really what you were doing, I think.
I was voting for the guy who was like, I guess we could try, you know, diplomacy with Iran or whatever. But, I mean, you that is such a dangerous way to run a campaign because it gives no positive associations.
Right.
And to think that negative associations will sink a candidate, but they will not create a winner.
Yeah.
They won't make you the winner.
Yeah.
The other guy failing, people don't have to show up to vote for you just because the other guy's an idiot.
No.
They might not show up to vote for him,
right.
But they also don't have to show up to vote for you because they'll be like, who are you?
Yeah. Exactly.
What do you stand for?
Yeah. And the other thing that I think that...
It's not like all the votes are there and people decide, you know, everyone votes and it's a matter of who they're going to vote for.
Right.
People don't have to show up.
Yeah. No, exactly. Well, and the other thing that I think that is so obvious about what's happening in 2018 is that the map is a bunch of Trump states.
Yeah.
So you can't show up in a place like Missouri, if you're Claire McCaskill or whatever, and just be like,
Hillary Clinton's platform.
Look at how terrible Donald Trump is. They all fucking voted for the man.
Yeah.
And while I'm sure some of them are having buyer's remorse, like, not enough of them to... You have to take something back to your constituents and be like, yes, he's terrible, and here's why what I have to
we
give
would
to you
do this better.
Is better.
Yeah.
If you only have half the message...
Then they can stay home.
Yeah.
Then there's no one to vote for.
Yeah.
You know, their choice is not... just you or the other guy.
Yeah.
It's a choice between you, the other guy, and not voting.
Yeah.
And a lot of people vote by not voting in this country.
They really do.
They vote with their not feet.
Yes.
They vote with their couches.
That's right.
And that, you know, we can complain about how Americans don't take voting seriously and don't, you know, commit, you know, do their civic duty and whatever.
Right. But if
but
they
ultimately,
felt...
if they felt strongly enough about a candidate, they would get off their fucking couches.
Bingo.
And it is your job as that candidate to convince them it's worth doing that.
Yeah.
Because it is really fucking inconvenient to vote. I waited in line for an hour and a half to vote back in November.
Yeah.
It was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to show them that it's worth showing up for you.
Yeah.
Because it's easier to not.
Right.
And if the other guy's a crazy idiot and they don't want to show up for him, that doesn't mean they want to show up for you.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between those two.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, Democrats will never learn. What is wrong with everyone?
but they must.
They must. I mean, I think that there is at least a faction of the party that understands what kinds of messages Democrats can use to win.
And I think that number is actually growing.
I think that number is growing. I think we're seeing, you know, successes in places that we didn't, that, you know, that you don't expect to see them, that are at least inspiring a grassroots kind of interest in this, so that even if the DNC doesn't take it up, there is going to be a faction of Democrats that are paying attention to this.
Yeah. Well, the thing
the
that,
money might not show
well,
up.
The
That's
other,
the problem.
Right. And the other thing that is important to remember about 2018 that we haven't had in a lot of these races is that we're going to have competitive primaries in a lot of these races, too. So the DNC may end up having to support a lot of Bernie people, because my guess is that those people are going to fucking tear it up in the primaries, because it's their voters who are going to get out there and be
hit the
road and who are going to donate the money. And our revolution is going to be a real force to be reckoned with when it comes to those races, more so than...
And it's going to be races the DNC doesn't think to focus on until it's too late,
I think. Yeah.
I think there is a lot to say for having grassroots energy, even if you don't have money.
So the DNC may have an economic message whether they want one or not, because it may just all be Bernie people who are selling an actual economic message. And
God,
then the DNC
hope.
Will look like heroes, and that'll piss me off.
I know. I would rather they look like heroes and we stop the crisis that is America right now.
Agreed. Yes.
Than that we get to show them once again that they don't know shit.
Right, I agree.
I've like showed them enough.
Right.
They're not learning. That's too bad.
Right,
but
exactly.
I've shown them
so many times.
I've done my best to show them.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
How much do you think I was paid? to head to the tax march on Saturday.
How much do I think you were paid, yeah, or how much do I think other people think that you were paid?
All guesses are valid.
Because I know that you were paid literally nothing,
yeah,
to go.
I think I paid money to go, in
you
fact.
You certainly did.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I paid money to a Lyft driver.
Yeah, that's what you sort did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you ask Donald Trump, though.
Everyone. All paid. Everyone there was person paid.
And here's the thing. If everyone there was paid, I'm pissed. Because I showed up of my own volition.
Right.
In support of the issue.
Right.
And if everyone else there was paid, aside from, I assume, the people whose sign said, I am not a paid protester. Maybe that's suspicious. I don't know.
I was going to say, maybe that's who was paid. Yeah.
But there were a lot of I'm not a paid protester signs at the tax
march.
I'm
sure there were. Yes.
It seems like a lot of people were interested in this tax thing.
Oh. Fascinating.
A lot of people spent time coming up with clever slogans. So if they're paid protesters,
I'm sure,
they really put their heart and soul into their signs.
Yeah.
More so than I would have if I were paid to be there.
I know. Yeah.
The tax march was kind of fun.
Yeah, was it? Tell me everything.
There was an exciting route that led us straight up a steep hill, so we lost some old people, sure, in the process.
Sure.
Okay. But it was all a right fun. It was sometimes these LA marches, because you're marching through downtown and no one's even there, and you're no, like, it's like three blocks to City Hall, and so you, yeah, do a quick march where you can't move, and then you get to City Hall and you're like, it's hot.
It was
this
hot,
march sorry, not only led us through a shady part of downtown.
Oh, I like that.
But it was, it gave us a little bit of marching space, so, oh, you could really like march
get
through
into it.
It.
Yeah.
I am becoming an expert chant leader, because,
oh,
it turns,
yeah,
out you need somebody,
to
do the
it
work.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of clever signs there, and a lot of people showed up. It was pretty big.
That's good.
And I think it was pretty big in other cities as well.
Yeah.
It seemed like, I mean, because it was a planned march, and because it was a, you know, a march that Trump was already ready to deflect.
Sure.
It's not like the women's march where like so,
right,
many,
exactly,
people showed up.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
we can only do that so much.
Yeah.
But it, I think, made a sort of good showing in various cities. And there were places where they had a tax march that you, like with the women's march, that you,
sure,
wouldn't expect.
Right.
The sort of zeitgeist nature of it, I think, was similar.
Totally.
Not on the scale, but similar.
Right, exactly. I think it was this was planned a long time ago.
Yes.
Like, I remember seeing, like, a Facebook invite for it, like, not long after the
women's
march.
It was right
march
after the women's march. We were looking for marches.
People were looking for marches. It made sense to do on tax day. People were still mad that we hadn't seen his,
yeah,
tax returns. And I think, on some level, that, like, the energy about that specific thing has waned a little bit.
Because, well, because we're
it's
dealing
still,
with treason.
I was going to say, and we're dropping bombs in Syria,
yeah,
and we're doing various other things. But it's still obviously an important issue. But I,
yeah,
think that was probably at least partly to do with why, you know, there weren't millions of people all,
yeah,
over the country.
Well,
but they still were pretty big, though. I mean,
yeah,
they were
pretty big. The other issue is that we have literally three weekends of protests in a row in this stretch. Because, and that is where things are getting chaotic.
Yeah.
We have,
sure,
the tax march. We,
yeah,
have the March for Science. Then we have the Earth Day march. It's like,
oh, yeah,
every weekend there's a march again. And,
yeah,
we were just recovering from our first round of marching every weekend.
I know. Yeah.
I think what's frustrating in LA is that I think they plan these marches for downtown so they can end at City Hall because there's a big space and you can have speakers.
Yeah.
I think that they should be doing these marches down Hollywood Boulevard.
I was going to say, nobody
lives
downtown.
No one is in City Hall. No one,
right,
is in downtown.
Yeah.
No one is in these office buildings on a Saturday or a Sunday,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, there's no good way to get there.
There's no good way to get there. It's not visible.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when you do a march like this, you want to, A, cut down significantly on the number of speakers. But,
sure,
B, you want to have the march happen somewhere that's visible. So that
visible.
People...
It has to be at least,
along
like,
the side,
sort of disruptive.
It has,
I mean,
to be disruptive, at,
yeah,
least in the sense that people along the side are like, what's going on here?
Right.
No one ever says that at the marches in LA because they're like, I didn't hear there was a march.
Right.
Never found out about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do,
yeah,
feel like one built-in advantage in New York is that there's always people everywhere.
That's true. Yeah.
And so doing a march anywhere is,
sure,
disruptive regardless,
yeah,
of the day.
Yeah.
But I wish that LA could figure out a way to plan,
yeah,
these in a more kind,
yeah,
of visible way.
Yeah. Leave it to Trump, though, to bring the whole thing back to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, he tweeted this. He said, I did what was an almost impossible thing to do for a Republican. Easily won the Electoral College. Now tax returns are brought up again. Someone should look into what... who paid the small organized rallies,
yeah,
yesterday. The election is over.
Remember when he was going to have the biggest rallies in support of him in history? And like,
nobody
it
went.
Was like three old,
right,
people. And
also remember when he had the biggest Electoral College victory in,
yeah,
you know,
in the history of the
of
world.
Ever and actually,
yeah,
didn't.
Remember, yeah, I mean, he had the biggest inauguration crowd.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, he's an overachiever.
Yeah. God.
Just a...
What a treat.
Just a big overachiever.
Oh, boy.
Final news.
Yeah.
You've already heard about the United Airlines
drama.
You've heard
about every single
bit of it. If you haven't, I'm not going to explain it to you.
Yeah.
But
United Airlines having a rough go of it. Because weren't they that they had the leggings problem a couple weeks ago?
They
right?
sure did.
That
yeah.
was them.
United, though, yeah. is literally the worst airline, and that's why.
Yeah.
No one enjoys flying United.
No.
You fly United if it's significantly cheaper than the next cheapest airline, and only significantly.
Yes, exactly.
Like, if the choice between flying United and flying American or Delta or something is, like, $200 less, then you're like, sure, I'll fly United.
Yeah.
If it's, like, on the border of $100 to $150, you think to yourself, am I really going
to
fly United?
Do this right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, United is notably the worst.
Sure.
So when they assaulted a passenger to get him off a plane that he had already boarded with ticketed.
Yes.
To make room for their crew.
Right.
Which, here's the thing. They're a giant corporation. They couldn't find room on any other airplane in the country.
Yeah.
Because they could pay for a fucking ticket on another airline if they absolutely needed to.
Of course.
Also, they own airplanes. They're the best equipped people to get passengers and staff from one place to another. If they, if anyone could find an airplane,
an airline
should be an airline.
Right.
So I call bullshit on their stupid policy.
But he had his teeth knocked out. He had his nose broken.
Yeah,
and of course there's video because everybody has a cell phone.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
don't
hello.
Do shit like this anymore.
No, you can't.
There's video everywhere.
No.
Assume you're on tape anyway.
Yeah.
United, though, in any case, today said they would not allow employees to take the place of civilian passengers anymore on overbooked flights.
Yes.
And I never thought that I would hate an airline more than Delta because Delta has routinely overbooked flights that I've been on and tried to pay off passengers. And at one point, I didn't make it onto a flight that I showed up on time for because they had overbooked it so dramatically.
Oh, my God.
But it turns out that being willing to actually physically assault your passengers to get them off a plane is worse than what Delta was doing, which was trying to pay me $200 to not board a flight.
Get on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, boy. Yikes. But what was interesting about this is that it sort of turned into it had the makings of a great news story because there was cell phone footage, there was blood, there was we all fly. We all hate United. There was, you know, we could all relate to this story, at least on some level anyway. But it took an interesting turn at a certain point where it also had this sort of like big guy versus the little guy where the corporations were sort of like trying to fuck over like one single person. But then later in the week, it took an interesting turn because it sort of like turned into like a whole like journalistic ethics thing. Because this newspaper in Kentucky, where he was either from or going, I can't remember, reminded their readers that he had a bit of a shady past.
Right.
Which obviously has nothing to do with anything. And it opened up a whole can of worms about whether, A, we should be reporting on those things and whether we should be caring about those things.
Right.
And I think we all, thankfully, decided...
We don't care.
No was the answer to both of those questions.
Well, it was unrelated to this story in every way. He's not more deserving of being
assaulted
by airline security.
Because he was... Because he had
a drug conviction.
Right, in 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A
decade and a half ago.
Yeah.
Almost 2 decades ago.
Yeah.
Like, it's just ridiculous. So that was... But that turned into sort of like I don't know. This had so many weird kind of like fluctuations to this
Yeah, this story has also had some real staying power.
It really...
I have not.
And it's going to have more staying power because I'm sure he's going to sue the fuck out of them.
Well,
he should, for God's sake.
They, like, knocked his teeth out. Like, what on earth?
Right?
Why would it involve that level of violence to get a passenger off of a plane who was just not willing to go off the plane?
Right.
And they claimed
he was being belligerent, which he wasn't.
They have video, unfortunately.
More cell phone video.
That shows that he was just being
like,
normal.
Calmly explaining to them why he was not intending to leave the plane.
Which is what you would do.
Yeah.
In any case,
oh boy,
I think as one final, you know, tip of our hat to the past, you should tell me what exactly Easter is.
Easter is the day that Jesus rose from the dead on the third day after having been crucified on Friday.
Here's an important question.
Yes.
Is there anything good about Friday? The good about Good Friday. Why is it called that? It sounds like the day that everyone's savior died.
Yes, but he also, had to die.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Is it for our sins?
Yeah.
So we don't have sins anymore. Do we not have sins anymore?
No, we have sins, but we can be renewed. We can have new life through the resurrection.
In 3 days.
Anytime you want. You can have it right now.
Okay.
You don't have to wait 3 days. There's no waiting period.
Was there anything different about Jesus after he rose from the dead that would lead you to believe that he was actually the undead?
Well, I don't know that I know the answer to that because I never saw him alive or undead.
Hmm.
So I don't know that I can answer that.
And yet you know for sure that he existed despite not having ever seen physical proof.
You know my thoughts on this. And that, like, yes, I go to church, but like right, I also sort of like
Brent
don't.
Is not also, a purist, is
I also
he?
Believe that all of the stories in the Bible are in the book, are there
like allegorical.
As, they're as lessons for us to sort of like, you know, for whatever reason they are.
But
many
like
of
a
them.
A theoretical person.
Oh, I mean, like, I am certain that, you know, I mean, I have family members who think, you know, God took pen to paper and that, you know, Jonah was actually living inside of a whale for a while. And I mean, like, these are, and that Noah was 600 years old when he single-handedly built an ark and put every single animal on Earth on it. I mean, like, you know, I don't.
There are literal interpretations.
Yes, of course. Like,
of
I don't have those things.
Have any
in
historians
my brain.
Looked into the death and rebirth of Jesus and suspected foul play?
I'm quite certain that they probably have. Yes.
I only ask because I suspect foul play.
Yes, I know that you do. Yes. Yeah.
Every time that I relearn the story of Easter, I am shocked and appalled by how extravagantly overwritten this story of Easter is. It seems like he didn't have to come back. Like, he could have symbolically died for everyone's sins, and we could have all felt like he made the ultimate sacrifice.
Sure.
That Jesus. He was a good guy.
Yeah.
Why does he have to come? Like, that adds a layer to the story that I'm like, why?
That's where it loses you?
Yes. I believe that somebody crucified a man who was just trying to do the right thing back in the era of crucifixions.
Sure.
Because, like, people were up to violent shit all the time
really
in
were.
Those days.
Yes.
And, like, those kinds of shenanigans are all over history.
They are.
So it sounds like a fair thing to assume happened.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Indeed.
I mean, were they doing this to the Son of God? I have my questions about that. But sure, a man who was a nice carpenter named Jesus.
Right. Yes.
I believe that they crucified him for
teaching people
unjust causes.
Teaching people to love one another themselves.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Why did he then have to return, though, after he had already made his point, I feel like? Hadn't he?
Sure, I guess.
And how do the bunnies fit in?
There's no bunnies in the story.
That's disappointing because I feel like...
I will say we were reminded of one fact that you would have appreciated in the sermon this morning. Because the first person that Jesus does show himself to after having risen from the dead.
Yeah.
You know, you obviously can
I can contest whether or not that was real.
Was Mary. It was a woman. And so the priest this morning was like, I don't know why we haven't had, you know, female priests or bishops until now. Because, like, the first person who was actually spread the news of Jesus having risen from the dead was a woman.
Did a woman start this rumor? Is that what this is all about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that why we've been angry at women this whole time?
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah.
In any case, okay. I will probably forget most of this story.
Yeah, no, you
until
will.
Next
and
year.
And I wasn't very clear. But, like, as you know, I sort of am not, like, a person who is...
Once you told me the term zombie Jesus, I started to understand a little bit what was going on.
Got it.
There's a few questions I have that have to do with why Mardi Gras is a thing and also what, you know, Good Friday could have possibly been good for. But, and also why Ash Wednesday is related to any of this, I'm not sure. But I feel like the basic fact of him rising from the dead was something that had eluded me for the first 28 years of my life.
Right, you did not know that that was what Easter actually was celebrated.
And that, you know, I thought it was
now
about,
you've got that.
I thought
We're
it was a
baby,
holiday that celebrated
steps.
Bunnies laying eggs, which they don't do in the wild. So that is pretty special.
Yeah, it would be almost as spectacular as rising from the
I
dead.
I would contend more.
Yes,
you
perhaps.
Know, I doesn't. It would shock me if an animal changed the way that they reproduce dramatically overnight for one day a year, more than a man rising from the dead.
We had an Easter bunny at church today.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
They bring bunnies to church?
No, they had a man in an Easter bunny
costume. Okay. Come on. That's creepy.
It was for the kids.
Was it Sean Spicer?
It was not.
Damn it.
No, that would have been great though.
Yeah. All right, well, that's the news.
That's it.
We'll talk to you next year.
Happy Easter.
I mean, next week. next year, we'll talk to you about Easter, but next week, we'll talk to you about the news.
That's right.
If we haven't died in a nuclear war.
Yep.
Hopefully, Easter will protect us.
Yes.
I don't know if it's one of those miracle holidays, but I'm just going with it.
Sure.
Sounds good. All right. Bye.